homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, we started looking at the Avatamsaka Sutra a few weeks back. And it's one of those things when you take something on, it's just as well you don't know what you're doing. Otherwise you wouldn't start. Because the Avatamsaka is large. It's the longest scripture in the Mahayana tradition, and the Mahayana tradition specializes in really long scriptures. And I think this is the longest. But we're not trying to start at the beginning and understand it all. What I've been trying to do is sort of dive in and pull out a pearl and bring it back. And that's how I find that I can study it. If I try and look at the whole thing, I'm just completely intimidated. Because it's vast, it's huge, it's limitless, it's boundless. And just to bring one little thing back and to talk about that, or to work on that for myself, actually, I find an extremely helpful thing to do. And it's something I can actually digest. So, or try and digest. The Avatamsaka Sutra, there's a whole school of Buddhism devoted to the study of this one scripture. And it's all about the conduct of bodhisattvas, beings who train and try to help other beings also, to save all beings before saving themselves. Helping beings. It's not like I am going to save all beings, but I'll do my best to help. All about how bodhisattvas train, both the big bodhisattvas like Avalokiteshvara and little new bodhisattvas like us, how we train in the Dharma, how we conduct ourselves, how we live a pure life, keep to meditation, the Buddhist precepts. It is for us, although it's this huge book about bodhisattvas, you can think, well, this is what they do, you know. But actually it's for us. It hasn't just kind of fallen out of heaven by mistake. It's for human beings, for us to train and practice with, so we can learn from it. And also, each of us is different. We all have different situations, different circumstances, different predispositions, different kind of weaknesses, different karmic tendencies. And we can apply the teachings of the Dharma to our own circumstances. For some of us, one thing is really easy, or seems really easy, and another thing seems really difficult. For another person, it's quite different. So whatever we study or practice, we apply to our own situation. How will this work for me? How can I make use of this in my own situation? Something's really subtle, something's really obvious. And today we're going to talk about beneficial practice, which means precepts. We are studying this chapter, we just started to study this chapter, on the 10 practices, which actually is the 10 paramitas. And the paramitas are the practices of bodhisattvas, what they do. Giving was the one we studied first. This is precepts. And then there is vigor, patience, meditation, wisdom, and other ones. Today is beneficial practice, which means precepts. And I'm going to read just one little paragraph because I find it's full of meat. What is the great bodhisattva's beneficial practice? Here, bodhisattvas maintain pure self-control, and their minds have no attachment to color or form, sound, fragrance, flavor or feeling. Also, they preach this to sentient beings. They do not seek power, social status, wealth, appearance, or dominions. They have no attachment to anything, but just firmly uphold pure conduct, thinking, as I maintain pure discipline, I shall surely get rid of all bondage, the torment of craving, oppression, slander, and disturbance, and will attain the impartial truth praised by the Buddhas. So, Here, bodhisattvas maintain pure self-control, and their minds have no attachment to color or form, sound, fragrance, flavor, or feeling, i.e., all the objects of the senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no attachment to the objects of the senses. Now, this sounds a little bit like sensory deprivation. You know, no attachment to anything I see, hear, smell, taste. You know, I could just be in a tin box. But it isn't that. Maintaining pure self-control, it sounds really kind of rigid. You know, I can't see anything, I can't do anything, I can't think anything or smell anything unless I break the precepts. And it's not that. No, we wouldn't last 5 minutes doing that. It's different. It's the mind, our old mind, having no attachment to these things. It's fine to taste flavors, to smell things, to actually to enjoy things. But when we're attached to them, that's when we have a problem. We're grabbing, pushing away. It's not avoiding things. It's not suppressing things. It's letting go of that clinging, that wanting, not wanting, grasping, pushing away that we talk about often. Because these are the things that tend to cause us to break the precepts. When I really want something, or I really do not want that to happen, I'm much more likely to break the precepts than if I accept everything that comes with equanimity and stillness and patience. If I'm really wanting something, really not wanting something, really criticizing or judging or, you know, getting upset about what I want and don't want, that's when I break the precepts. And as I said, it's a little different for everyone. Some people have problems with one thing, some with another. And for some of us, just keeping a basic precept like don't be angry is really, really hard. Moment by moment, we struggle with it. And for another person, it doesn't seem to be that big a deal. And yet, we can look more deeply and see, where do I become angry? Where do I become just a little judgmental about, just a little critical thought about somebody? Or just a little irritability. And for another person, they may be in a frothing rage, you know. So we're all different. And all the things that, all our precepts, all our tendencies also are like this, different for everyone. And what we do is we see what we have ourselves. What am I working with? What do I need to work on? What do I need to deal with? And how do I use the precepts to help me with that? And it's the attachment to the objects of the senses to start with. It is the most obvious thing that causes us to break precepts. The things I want, things I don't want. Things I like, things I don't like. That's the first, the most obvious trap, you know. Greedily grabbing something at the expense of somebody else. Or just acting out of ill will and dislike of somebody. Getting angry because something is being taken away from us. And we want it back. Views and opinions. We're taught from childhood to create views on things. What do I think of this? You know, what do you think of this? Do I like this? Is this a good idea? Do I want it? Do I not want it? And now we have to learn to stop doing that to some extent. You have to have a view sometimes. You have to know, you're standing in the supermarket, you have to have some thought about what you're going to put in your shopping basket. You can't just stand there, you know. And you can't also spend 45 minutes figuring out or how, you know, running all by the precepts, like, what precepts am I keeping if I buy spaghetti, you know? You have to get on, live your life and be normal. And yet, within all these things that we do, precepts arise and we can look at them and work with them. So, the basic objects of sense, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, the mind also. But we've got more, the mind has more to come. Now we've got some other kinds of wanting, not wanting. It's a little more subtle, but it's still based on the sense desires to a large extent. These bodhisattvas, they do not seek power, social status, wealth, appearance or dominions. You can look at this and think, I don't want power and social status and dominions and wealth. What has this to do with me? But if we look a little more closely, there's more to it than meets the eye. There's some really interesting things. And with all these things, it sheds a little different light on our motives or our keeping of the precepts. Each of them has a slightly different thing and they work together. Power, you know. We don't have to be president in order to have power. We have all kinds of power over each other and seek power over each other in subtle ways that we may not be aware of. Just getting someone else to do what we want, you know, it's having power over somebody. Well, they do what I want them to do. I think they should really do this with their life. Even beneficial. We want to help people. Still, there's power. Creating something that affects other people, you know, even a really nice thing. Building something that really benefits beings. I did that. I made that. Look how it's helping people, you know, and feeling rather good about it. That's power in a certain way. Having influence over other people, however beneficial, people listen to us, do what we think they should do, you know, power. People following our suggestions. Yes, that was my idea. I did that, you know. The helping professions, anyone who has been in the helping professions knows that this is a huge trap, this whole thing of power over other people, and how careful you have to be not to use that unwisely, not to have a romantic involvement with a patient or a client or a student. Just to be really careful not to misuse it or push it, even in a way you think is good, to get someone to do something you think they should do beyond what is within one's scope. It's really subtle and can be really tricky. To see one's own motives. What am I doing? Why am I doing this? What is my own motive? Is it because I want to have a little more influence in this person's life? I think I'm good for them, you know? Or where is there a self here is what it comes down to. To be able to help beings without being a me helping people. It's very tricky. But when there's a me there, I'm helping. I'm doing good. They listen to me. You know, I'm being beneficial. I'm having a good influence on people. Then we've got a little bit of a self, a large self. And we can break precepts with the best of intentions. You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We can think, but I'm helping. This is a good thing to do. I know it's not exactly legal, but... And I just fudged the truth ever so slightly, but there's a good reason I did that. You know, it's for a good thing. It's very tricky, very slippery. Looking at where we form attachments to these kinds of situations. So when we have an attachment, or a self, or a view, or an agenda, that's when we get into trouble. If we can just offer help, or a little advice when asked, preferably when asked, and then leave it be, and not have too much of an attachment to the outcome, then it's a lot better, and we're much less likely to break the precepts and create suffering for ourselves and others, even with the best of intentions. And to see what happens when that doesn't happen, when we don't have influence. People don't listen to us. Everybody ignores us. They don't like our idea. Our project doesn't work out because nobody's interested. And how kind of upset we may be as a result. You know, they don't see what we really need to do here. Breaking precepts because we have an attachment to the outcome. Social status, this is the next one. Social status, you know. But being respected and looked up to, you know. Being listened to, asked for advice. They want my advice. Maybe I've got something to offer here. Being competent. not to be completely foolish, being the person in charge, you know, and not looking like an idiot. Most of us have a fairly strong attachment to not looking like an idiot. And sometimes it fails miserably. But why worry? When you look like a complete fool, sometimes that's the best place to be, actually, because in fact, we probably are a complete fool. And to be able to just let go and not worry too much about how other people see us, because these are all ways of seeing ourselves through the eyes of other people. And of course, there's a self that's being seen and an agenda. And this is when we can break precepts by trying to look better, you know, not look foolish. Just, you know, look respectable and as though we know what we're doing and so forth. Wealth. This seems like a more obvious trap. But just look at our desire for security, for comfort, for enjoyment. You know, will this make me happy? And of course, pursuing wealth is easy to break a precept. Just bend the law a little bit for the taxes or something like that, or just a slightly not so very great deal because it's really advantageous and it won't really hurt that other person and all that. Just, you know, little bendings, which actually are breakages or the not keepings to the precepts. The pure conduct, the purity, is the purity of intention. And when it's a bit murky, we can't see right through it. There's a slightly murky aspect there because it's not pure. That slight impurity, that slight cloud of self or the agenda or whatever it might be, it sort of muddies the water ever so slightly. But pure conduct, pure discipline, is when it's transparent, you can see through to the bottom. And that's what's really liberating. Appearance, this is another one. Attachment to appearance is not just, or maybe being beautiful, pretty, handsome, imposing, you know, or pleasant, just being like, seeming like a nice person, or strong, or healthy. Or attributes like being kind, or being seen as generous, or compassionate, caring, intelligent, competent, resourceful. Endless ways of investing in our appearance, whether external appearance or character kind of appearance, attributes. And we do this, you know. I don't like to have my little meannesses and selfishnesses paraded. I'd rather keep them to myself, thank you. I'd rather look like a nice, generous, precept-keeping person rather than a slob, which I may think myself to be, you know. Appearance, attachment to appearance. Dominions. That sounds kind of kingly, having dominion. I'd have dominions, but we have possessions. We may have, you know, houses, land, wealth, stuff, things. They're all dominions, even, you know, just our books, a library of books, what's wrong with that? You have millions of books, that's also a dominion. Attachment to all these things. Now, these are just some of the things I came up with when I looked at this little list of, you know, power, social status, wealth, appearance, dominions. Everybody would have their own things that would come to mind. But the valuable thing is to look, how does this apply to me? What do I see when I look at appearance? Or dominions, you know, instead of saying, oh, I don't worry about that. Well, do I? And if I do, am I keeping to the precepts? Or am I getting kind of, am I murking the water ever so slightly, just drifting into attachment to these things? Because it's easy to think, oh, I don't worry about, you know, I'm not attached to things. Having power and social status, you'd think there's no problem with that, but actually it's extremely difficult to have power and social status and be completely unattached to it and have no self there at all. It's very difficult to be wealthy and have actually no attachment to one's wealth because it's a slippery thing and it gets in there. It's not saying there's anything wrong with those things. We just need to be really careful. They have no attachment to anything. This is the bodhisattvas. They have no attachment to anything, but just firmly uphold pure conduct. Just firmly, pure conduct, transparent down to the bottom, to be able to see purely and simply. This is something to aspire to, and I think, I know I fall far short of this. I have all kinds of little motives and thingies and agendas and, you know, crabby little thoughts and stuff like that. And if I look, I can see them more clearly and let them go. And these are some of the ways in which we can do that, just a showing a light, shedding a light on our keeping of the precepts in a certain way, and then a different light from somewhere else. All these ways are really helpful, different for everybody. And the bodhisattvas, they firmly uphold pure conduct, thinking, as I maintain pure discipline, there's another word, discipline, we sort of think, oh, the straitjacket again. No, the mind. As I maintain pure discipline, I shall surely get rid of all bondage, the torment of craving, oppression, slander, and disturbance. Here's another list of things that I've found really helpful to look at in terms of precepts. Bondage. We're enslaved to our likes and dislikes, cravings and disgust, pleasure and pain. The eight worldly conditions, gain and loss, fame and disgrace, praise and blame, elation and sorrow. These things always arise and they move us. If you're getting blamed for something, it's very difficult not to get upset, especially if you think it's not fair. You know, we'd much rather be praised. And these things sway us back and forth. And that swaying back and forth tends to encourage us to break the precepts, because, or not keep to them purely, because we have a self to protect. And if we can just start letting it go, then the bondage is loosened. The torment of craving. Torment of craving. This is the basis of suffering, as the Buddha said. Craving. Whether it's whatever kind of desire, something we want, or something we really want not to have. Letting go of our desire by working on our body, speech, and mind. First on the outward actions, not to be grabbing things we shouldn't be grabbing, or grabbing things that really are not best, or just being greedy and self-indulgent. Working on the precepts in this way, just seeing what we're doing. Why am I doing this? Is this going to make me happy? Maybe not. First with the actions, outward form. Then with our speech, either grabbing or pushing away, looking at our words. And then our mind, which is the slipperiest of all, working from the outside to the inside, looking at what our mind does when moved by wanting or not wanting, our little agenda, very subtle sometimes. And if we indulge in something, we want more of it. Never-ending thirst. But if we look at the mind that wants and say, do I want to go this way? Look at it clearly. Then it can help us to relinquish, because we're looking at what we're doing and seeing clearly, not just being dragged off blindly into some thing we don't really want, or some craving that was really unsatisfactory and going nowhere. And the indulging is different for everybody. For some people, indulging means the outward act of doing something. For another, it's indulging in thought. For another, it's just letting the thought dwell there for just more than a moment, just recognizing the thought and not immediately relinquishing it. That's an indulgence for some people, for some of us. And for others, it's just different, indulging in speech. For everyone, it's a bit different. But we all have a sense of when we're indulging or when we're not keeping purely to the precepts for us, for how it is for us, for our own situation, whether we're a monk or a layperson, really new to Buddhism, coming for the first time, or whether we've been training for many, many years. For all of us, there's a slight different pattern here. Not necessarily uniform. We can be really, you know, not having a problem too much with one thing and have a terrible trouble with something else. But there's no judgment in this. It's just what will help, because the precepts are the great liberators. They are tools for training, things to help us. They are not clubs to beat us with. It's really a helpful way to see it. So when we know that we're not keeping purely to the precepts in the way for us, something in us knows and is not happy. When we're not really being quite straight, if we're wobbling, trying to find a way out, find a way around this precept or around this thing, we're still subject to that torment of craving because we're still panting. We haven't given it up. If we can cut it clean, just say, no. Easier said than done, but it's better than sneaking around or trying to have it both ways, trying to have our cake and eat it too. Craving is still there. Craving in two ways, cake and eat it. But if we can just say, no, no, I see it clearly, look along a straight line, see where we're going with this. Not a good idea. Relinquish. It's much better. And we're not so much tormented. It may be painful, but torment is when we're struggling with ourselves in different ways. Oppression. We're oppressed by our defilements, by our weaknesses and hindrances, by the things that create suffering for us. It's not a good-bad thing. It's not defilements in the sense of sin. It's defilements as something that gets in our way, that prevents us from seeing our purity, that true nature, purity of a peaceful heart. And the defilements, as the Buddhism calls them, is what creates restlessness and worry and suffering, because we are not peaceful at heart. We're not keeping to the precepts in the best way we can. Sometimes it feels as though the precepts are oppressing us, but actually it's because we want something, or we don't want something, and they seem to be obstructing. I really want this thing, and the precepts say I can't have it. You know. In fact, if we look more clearly, precepts are trying to help us to relinquish that torment of craving. The great liberators. Because when we keep to the precepts, the heart feels at ease. Even when it's really hard, the heart feels at ease because it knows it's doing what is good to do and relinquishing what is good to relinquish. And there's a freedom, a breathing more freely when we do that. And it's easier to let it go when we just say, I see where I'm going with this, not a good idea. Or I see where I still have an attachment to this thing and it keeps coming up, just keep relinquishing it. Even if the wanting still keeps arising over and over again, or we keep breaking the same old precept, you know, or we keep having the same thing arise, we're doing our best. We're doing our best in our training to keep letting go, keep relinquishing, and to keep working on that purity of heart. And for, as I said, for everyone it's different, but we know what makes us uneasy with ourselves and what is liberating. We know what it is for us, and we can work on it. And the precepts really help us, seeing them in these all these different ways. It's not a problem that the wanting or the not wanting arises. It's what we do with it. Holding on to it, indulging it, or letting it go. Over and over again. This is liberation, to keep letting go. And even if it keeps coming up, as I said, over and over again, it's still liberating. We may cling back, and yet we can relinquish again, over and over, just to see, to look, see what our mind does with things. Keep letting go. Slander. Be free from slander. We won't be slandering other people, and they won't be slandering us. There's a feeling of worry when we are not keeping to our precepts because we worry about what people will think. We worry about what we think. And if we're keeping to the precepts, we don't have to fear that. It's not pride or complacency. It's peace of heart that I'm doing my best. And we still have better we can do. We still have things we indulge in, but we can keep working at it, keep trying. Disturbance. There's nothing more disturbing than when we break precepts that we know, especially when we know better. I know I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. And then we feel completely terrible. We feel worried, upset, guilty maybe, fearful, afraid of what will happen. We feel really bad. We repent. We try again. And that little piece in the Shishogi that we read, true contrition brings purification and salvation, true conviction and earnest endeavor. When we see that we have not kept to the precepts, we can always start again. It's not as though everything is over. We just look and see, I'm sorry. See why we went wrong. You know, how did that happen? How did I get over here? That's what it was. Try again. Change of heart. Keep trying. Purification and salvation. True conviction and earnest endeavor. It's never lost. We don't break the precepts once and for all, and there they are, shattered forever. We may not always keep to them, but we can always get them back, over and over and over again. It's really hope and compassionate, not a club. And this disturbance that arises when we don't keep to the precepts is actually our friend, because it gets our attention. When we feel a little bad, then we can look and say, why do I feel kind of uncomfortable about that conversation I just had? We can look back and think, I was a little irritable, or I was a little unfair, or I wasn't quite straight with that person. And we can look and see, but we didn't quite keep to the precepts, or we just had a little niggle and we ignored it. And that disturbance helps us to see and to do better. Sometimes it's a really massive disturbance because we've done something really we should not have done and we have a lot of pain. That still can help us because we can really look and see, not to do. Don't do it again. Be really careful. Look at suffering because it's suffering that gets our attention. And it's suffering that helps us to see where we have not kept to the precepts. And the bodhisattvas say, as I do this, I maintain pure discipline, and so forth. I shall surely get rid of all bondage, the torment of craving, oppression, slander, and disturbance. And I will attain the impartial truth praised by the Buddhas. We will attain this impartial truth, the truth that is beyond attachment, beyond self and other. Again, the Shishogi, there is no distinction between subject and object for any who dwell herein. No distinction between me and somebody else, between me and the thing I want or don't want. There's no distinction there, no attachment, no clinging. The impartial truth that does not cling to anything. It sounds so wonderful and it's so easy to forget, to start grabbing something and pushing away again. But we will attain the impartial truth praised by the Buddhas by keeping to the precepts as best we can and by having compassion for ourselves when we don't. That's just as important. When we have not kept to the precepts, have compassion. Again, look and see, how did I get here? How did this happen? That's what it was. Mindfulness. See what we're doing in our actions. What am I doing here? What are we saying? What's coming out of my mouth? And how am I saying it? What am I thinking? What's going on in my mind? What's my agenda here? What is it that I'm trying to do here? Why am I doing this? Why am I talking to this person in this way? You know? And all these aspects shed light on our motives, on our weaknesses, on the spots in ourselves that cause us suffering. Because the whole thing is to relinquish suffering. It's not to make us, you know, a good Buddhist. It's to relinquish suffering. And foster bodhicitta, the heart that seeks the way. We will attain the impartial truth praised by the Buddhas. It's not just to be nice people. It's to realize the impartial truth praised by the Buddhas. This is the end of suffering. And to keep to the precepts as purely as we can is a really wonderful tool to help us with that. The fostering of bodhicitta helps us to keep to our resolve to realize truth. And then when something arises, do I really want this? Is this good to do? Will it make me happy? Or will it just create more suffering? You know? And again, the Jishogi says, if you accept these precepts wholeheartedly, the highest enlightenment will be yours. And this is the undestroyable Buddhahood, which was understood, is understood, and will be understood in the past, present, and future. Whenever these precepts are truly accepted, Buddhahood is reached. Every person who accepts them becoming the true child of Buddha. With the children of Buddha, we are not there yet. We're working on it. We accept the precepts as fully as we can in these ways of looking at them, seeing how they apply to us. How do they apply to me? How do I work on ceasing from evil, ceasing from doing that which causes suffering? Do only good, that which is good, beneficial. Not going around looking for good to do. Doing good for others, helping beings, as arises naturally and as I can. How do I do these things? Just in all these ways, looking and seeing what's going on in our mind. What are we doing? What are we saying? And what are we thinking? And the bodhisattvas work on these precepts, and they also preach this to sentient beings. This is for us. It's not just for those bodhisattvas. It's for us, new bodhisattvas. It preaches to sentient beings, to us, so that we also may train ourselves in these ways, as is good for us in our circumstances, our situation. How do I apply these precepts to myself? Work on them for myself. Look at my own weaknesses and shortcomings. And as I said, it's not just I keep the precepts and then I'll be a good Buddhist. They liberate us. They free us from suffering. They help us to free ourselves from suffering. The more we examine ourselves, the more we look at what we are doing and thinking and saying, the more closely we try to keep to the precepts with kindness. It's not an ideal. It's something we aspire to. The more we do it with kindness, seeing our weaknesses, accepting them and working on them with that discipline, which is the word people think, you know, the straitjacket again, but it's actually kindness, because this helps us free ourselves from suffering. And if you let go of the sort of fearful thing of being afraid of precepts, we can see how they can really help us. They are wonderful tools of training. They're not a concrete cast. They are the liberators to help us. And so looking at this little paragraph, these are just some of the things that I came up with in this little paragraph in the Avatamsaka Sutra. And I find this really helpful for myself to look at things like this, look at the precepts in these ways. How do I seek social status? How do I look at power or wealth? What does it mean to me? How am I moved by these things? Where is my attachment to them still? Objects of sense. You know, am I still picking out on cake whenever I get a chance? Or taking something at the expense of somebody else? How do I do this? Where are my shortcomings and how can I work on them? By seeing them, by looking with a clear eye. May we have clear water down to the bottom so that we can see and see through that murk of self and see that pure bodhicitta, pure Buddha nature, and realize that impartial truth praised by the Buddhas. There is a way we can do it, and the scriptures tell us how. We all have our own combinations of keepings of the precept, the gross things and the subtle things, our own faults, shortcomings, weaknesses and strengths. And we can all practice compassion and work on them for ourselves. And that's what I came up with when I looked at this little paragraph in the Avatamsaka Sutra. So, there we go. Thank you. And we'll have tea.